Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 147 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. It's the holidays. We're post-Christmas, before New Year's, and joining me to talk about all things Atlanta Braves is the great Scott Coleman. What's up, man?
What's up, Brad? Happy holidays to you, and glad to be doing one of these.
For sure, and as I said, I think, you know, a week and a half plus ago, when I recorded last with Eric, that we were not going to have a podcast on the Sunday before Christmas, just because unless something crazy happened, which nothing's happened, obviously. But I wanted to at least get one more show in the can before the calendar flipped to 2019, and I prompted Scott, and we're here to talk about mostly mailbag questions because, as I referenced a second ago, absolutely nothing has happened between the last time we talked and now. And for reference, it's Thursday night. It is December the 27th. So when you're hearing this, probably December 28th or later. But Scott, before we get started, I'm not bothered by this. I know I talked about it last week with Eric too, but are you bothered at all by the quiet? Because I think it's just kind of what happens in December with most baseball things.
Yeah, generally you get a little bit of action before Christmas, but you know, front offices closed down more or less but this entire week from Christmas to New Year's. Everyone goes home. I mean, you forget that they're real people there and not just these robots that run the baseball team. So, it's unfortunate from a fan perspective that the Braves have made basically all of their moves this offseason within honestly a 30-minute window. I mean, I think it was about 30 minutes after McCann signed or reported that McCann was signing that Donaldson was reported. From a fan perspective, you wish it would have broke 2 weeks later to help kind of spread everything out. But obviously things are going to happen as they do. So, but no, not worried. I mean, we're about at the midway point of the offseason. If you would have told me in October that, you know, by Christmas break, the Braves would have signed McCann and then signed Donaldson, obviously, I would have said that's a good start. And there's obviously some holes left to address besides that. So not worried. And I do think in January we'll start to see some action as some of the big names of free agents sign and other things get moving.
To be sure, we'll talk about some stuff that we got in question form. So thanks everyone for the questions this week for this makeshift episode, Holiday Mailbag. I know that's sort of a traditional thing that podcasts do, is kind of just go through a bunch of questions, and we're going to do the same thing. But there is one, I'm not even sure, it's definitely not news, actually. It's more of a tidbit, and honestly, I feel bad for our fearless leader, Chris Willis, who's been trying to run a website over the last 10-plus days when there's just absolutely nothing happening. But Mark Bowman had his mailbag post to end the year, and Bowman is a friend of the program, so we'll talk about this a little bit. The one thing that sort of caught my eye from what he wrote was, and I'm quoting him here, he says, "My guess is Julio Teheran will still be with the Braves on opening day," end quote. Now, that isn't like a bowl you over nugget, but it is something to consider because Bowman's usually pretty plugged in, and the fact that he's thinking at least that he would sort of bet on Teheran being there versus not being there perked me up a little bit. So what was your response to that? And obviously there's still a chance he gets dealt, but I've kind of gone into the whole offseason thinking he was going to be gone almost certainly, and it appears that may not be the case now.
Yeah, I guess I think ideally, and this isn't, you know, groundbreaking here, I think ideally you're able to trade him and get rid of at least some of the was it $11 million, $12 million that he's owed next year. But as we saw last year, he is a serviceable enough starting pitcher if he's the Braves' number five to at least begin the year. Bowman talked about using him early so you aren't counting on maybe a Mike Soroka or a Max Fried or Tukey to throw 180, 200 innings next year. He's obviously somebody who would have a short leash, and we saw last year all of his starts were kind of an adventure, but he is who he is at this point. He can at least throw you a couple innings without completely falling apart, or at least that's who he was in 2018. So if they aren't able to just get rid of him this winter, I don't think he's at a position where you just kind of cut him or release him outright. I think he has too much value to do that. But ideally, they are able over the next 2 months, maybe even a spring training deal if you still have them. If a team loses two starters and all of a sudden needs an innings eater, that could always be an option too. I'm with you. I thought he was somebody who would for sure be moved this winter, and there's obviously still time to make that happen. But as of right now, if he is the Braves' fifth starter, I guess it's not the worst thing in the world.
I agree. And listen, I mean, for all the stuff that we were pretty hard on him last year, with good reason, he was pretty bad. You know, he had a 0.7 Fangraphs WAR in 175 innings. That's bad, but it's not completely unusable. Like, he finished the season with a sub 4 ERA, albeit sort of by a miracle with some luck and a low BABIP, all that fun stuff. But you know, there are a lot of teams that would like to have Julio Teheran, and the Braves are probably one of them in terms of just. As you mentioned, they're not going to cut him. Like, any notion of that is not going to happen. Like, if they're on the hook for him, they're paying him. He'll be in the rotation that first week of the year. And as you said, like, there's nothing terribly wrong with that. It's not crazy to have him throw innings on this baseball team. Like, he can help you. The short leash thing is interesting in that he's not the kind of pitcher for me that's like easily managed on a short leash, because most of his value, honestly, is the fact that he can just go out there every 4 days or every 5 days. I mean, and throw innings. Like, he's been very durable in his career. You know, he's made six straight seasons of 30 plus starts. That's actually really impressive. But if you have him on a short leash, like, if he gets batted around the first two starts of the season, do you just pull the plug? Like, it's kind of tough to evaluate him because he's the kind of guy that's going to have two bad starts in a row and then have two good starts in a row. Like, he's that kind of inconsistent pitcher right now. So it's tough for me. I'd be looking to move him, but as you sort of mentioned there, and as Bowman sort of alludes, there is some value to having the guy who's going to go out and throw innings. And if the Braves don't make that big move for a big time starter, and they're relying on all the young guys, you know, there are a couple of young guys who were in the rotation last year that will be in there all season long this year. But if they're not, if you're looking beyond those guys, Teheran may not be a bad bridge option if you don't want to just throw Tukey in there in April or throw whoever. You know, Soroka had the injury last year, etc. At some point, I can't imagine all the young guys that even might make the rotation are going to throw that many innings. So if you want to have a bridge guy, Teheran's sort of that in-house option for that. Like, I've long thought the Braves could sign someone in February, March that with an eye towards just that insurance policy, but maybe they just have a very expensive one in Julio Teheran, and that wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world.
Yeah, I'm with you. And if he would happen to become a long guy in the bullpen, if they can't, you know, if they have better options, if one of the young guys takes a step forward and just clearly they're a better team when whoever that may be is starting instead of Julio, I can see where he might have some value as a long man. The Braves last year too, almost famously at this point, really did anything they could to get an extra day of rest for all their starters. Especially when someone like Sean Newcomb was so much better with a day or two of extra rest. So maybe they utilize his skill set a little bit more and give him starts, maybe not even regularly, but every other week, something like that, and then have him in the bullpen the other time. So it's never a bad thing to have some options in your rotation. It's not like they're searching far and wide to sign two veteran starters over the next month just to eat innings this year. To have the young guys and to have Julio isn't the worst scenario in the world. But ultimately, I think the Braves would prefer to trade him this, in January or February. But if that doesn't happen, it's certainly not a huge hindrance to the team.
For sure. And if you're looking for optimism, it's kind of crazy to consider this, but Julio's still only 27 years old. He'll be 28 in January. It feels like he's 35, but he's not. So that's something to keep an eye on. Like, maybe he just bounces back a little bit. I wouldn't bank on that, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. Like, he's got a lot of innings on his arm, but he's not the like really old guy that just can't possibly bounce back. And sort of, I guess we'll leave it there. With Julio, I want to get to the questions now. Again, thanks to everybody for sending questions in on Twitter and elsewhere. One that we got a few times that I'm going to sort of combine here to start with is that people want us to rank the areas of need that the Braves still have. Obviously, the big ones are corner outfield, starting pitching potentially, and the bullpen, and sort of rank those in terms of the actual importance to upgrade, because as we know, this is not going to be the roster the Braves have. At some point, they're going to do something, whether it be at a minimum, they're going to have to sign another outfielder. What's the one thing that we know they're going to absolutely have to do because they just don't have a third outfielder right now? Like, I guess Adam Duvall would be the starting outfielder right now. That's not going to happen. So aside from that, I mean, how would you rank these? I think that's the most glaring, but is it the most important? How would you sort of prioritize these three?
I think for sure it's corner outfield, as you said. I mean, you can't go into the year with Adam Duvall as your starting outfielder. you have to find someone. So it's for sure outfield. I think you can make an argument that the rotation, the starting pitcher, might actually be a bigger need. But at the same time, I think if you're looking, there are corner outfielders out there who I think legitimately improve the Braves. Whereas realistically, you look around Major League Baseball right now, there might be maybe even not even a half dozen pitchers who are, one, realistically acquirable via trade, and two, who are significantly better than what the Braves currently have. That is, you know, Sonny Gray, Marcus Stroman. If the Giants decide they're going to trade Bumgarner, the Indians still haven't made a move, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm just not entirely sure that there's a can't miss starting pitcher out there who significantly moves the needles for the Braves. So I guess I would probably rank in the areas of need outfielder, then starting rotation, then bullpen. Once Edwin Diaz got traded to the Mets, I just don't see an obvious option for the bullpen if they aren't going to pay the free agents, which I don't think they should.
Kimbrel's not coming, folks. I promise you, he's not coming.
Yeah, even if he's looking for 6 years and $120 million or whatever.
Well, in that Bowman mailbag, he got a question about Kimbrel, which is predictable. A lot of Braves fans want Kimbrel, which I understand. He's obviously former Brave, awesome, et cetera. But the one thing that he sort of illuminated was that if the asking price fell all the way down and the years fell all the way down to like the 3 year range, maybe the Braves get involved. That was sort of the cutoff point that he sort of put out there in the mailbag. I kind of agree with that. Like, if you can get him maybe 3, I mean maximum 4. I wouldn't give anybody 4 years in the bullpen, but 3 years, maybe 4. If you get a good deal on Kimbrel, that still seems unlikely to me. But maybe there's a scenario where he just doesn't get the money anywhere and he just can't find it and wants to come home and be comfortable. I get that. If that happens, then sure. But if it's anything remotely near the asking price that he and Ottavino both have huge asking prices, I'm not interested in paying those guys that kind of money. Yeah.
What's the most you would give Kimbrel? That's an interesting. So what's years and dollars? What's the
Me?
Most you would give him?
Ooh. Yeah. 345.
Yeah. Like I could maybe even do. Yeah. I mean, maybe like
350, like something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I would not come on this podcast and throw a fit if they gave him 4 years. If it was reasonable, like if it was like 4 years, 100, I would be that would be too much. But if it was a 4 year deal and you got a reasonable average annual value, I wouldn't love that, but I wouldn't throw a fit.
Like, what about four and 80 million? What would you say?
I would be critical of that, but I wouldn't kill it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I wouldn't love that, but it wouldn't be like this like preposterous idea. If they give him 6 years and 100 and whatever he asked for, 6 years and 120, whatever he
yeah,
was,
there's no way.
That's insane. Yeah. And I would crush them, but 4 and 80, I think that's a bad contract, but it's not like if you're a contender, you probably in free agency are going to sign someone that the years you want that guy are years 1, 2, maybe 3. That's kind of the issue with free agency in general, is that you're almost baking in some bad years at the end. And I think year 4 of that's pretty risky. Like, closers are just kind of volatile in general. And, you know, Kimbrel is one of the best closers of all time right now to this point in his career. Like, that's not even hyperbole. He's been that good. But you're paying for what he's already done rather than what he's going to do in the future, probably.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So 480 would not be great. I mean, if it was 360, like I know I said 345, 350, 360, I would not really be upset by that. Like, I feel like it's probably too much, but just, you know, same average annual value, but 3 years instead of 4, the risk mitigation there is probably worth it to where, again, I think I would come on here and just say, okay, that's fine. I wouldn't praise it. I wouldn't kill it. You get into 4 years, anything more than like 460, I would be pretty critical of, I think.
Yeah. Somebody mentioned this the other day, and I'm not sure he would do it, but because he had, I mean, last year, even though he was as amazing as Kimber was last year, it was probably the worst season of his big league career. Somebody kind of proposed.
I mean, he was bad in the playoffs, like bad.
Yeah. He was, and in the second half, he had an ERA above 4. His walks were way up, though, you know, part of that might be pitching in the American League East, but no, I mean, he wasn't great. Someone mentioned almost like what Josh Donaldson did and do a 1 year kind of bounce back contract. If that's something, you know, if it gets to February and Craig still hasn't signed and they say, well, let's go for exactly what Donaldson did, do it, you know, a 1 year, $20 million deal and see if he can return to his elite form of basically every season before last year, that would obviously open some things up as well.
You do that instantly, I think. I mean, anything short of like 127, I would be okay with that. Like one year it opens a lot of doors. I know we praise the Donaldson deal in that similar way because just the risk is just not there. Kibler will be the same way. Like the money could be used in other ways, I suppose. But if you get a guy who is fully capable of being the best closer in the league on a 1 year deal, I'm okay with that. And I mean, by the way, like just looking at his numbers a little bit, 2016, there were whispers about Kimbrel, like, you know, falling off. He was kind of average he's pretty good still, but then he came back in 2017 and was absolutely incredible again. It was like a 3.5-1 player. And then, you know, 2018, he regressed again. And by the way, regress for Kimbrel was still like a 2.7 ERA. Like he was still really good, just not incredible like he used to be. And my thing is he's going to be 31 pretty soon, 31 in May. That's not like super old, but when you're a guy who has been in the majors for almost a decade, there's some mileage there. And just my guard would be up. But yeah, the 1 year pillow contract is pretty interesting. And I think if he wanted to do that, and I have no idea if he would, the Braves would probably be about as good of a destination as he could possibly ask for, knowing that he's been here, they need him, they're trying to win. There'd be a lot of opportunities for him. If he wanted to do that, I can't imagine a better place for him to do it.
Yeah. For sure. And who knows? I mean, we'll see. Maybe we talk now, maybe next week he's going to get a 5-year, $100 million deal
from somebody.
But February rolls around and he's still just not getting any phone calls and everyone's looking at a 3 or 4 year deal and he's still wanting a 5 or 6. Maybe he does, maybe he does want to kind of do what Donaldson did and bet on himself and bet on returning to form. We'll see. So it's an interesting debate nonetheless, but I guess to get back to our original question, I think unless Kimbrel's price comes way down, which I'm still betting it won't, ultimately I'd prefer to use whatever money is left on the outfield and starting rotation and then just try to piece together the bullpen. The bullpen really was pretty solid last year before. I mean, everyone remembers how bad it was in August and September and then the playoffs, but I think it was just more a factor of guys like Dan Winkler, Jesse Biddle. They were just out of gas at the end of the year, and that's because it was their first full years. And whenever you're pitching every other night in the major leagues in your first full year, you're going to wear down. I think ideally the Braves would add at least one or two veteran arms, maybe after the top guy sign, grab somebody off the scrap heap. But I think you can, if you go into the year hoping that Viz is healthy, Minter, Winkler, maybe Sabatka's are a real thing, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe those are good enough and you can always add to the bullpen at midseason. But for sure, outfield. I mean, there's really no debate. You have to find an outfielder. The lineup right now is really top heavy. You need that fourth place lineup or fourth place hitter in the lineup to solidify and protect Freddie, especially if they're going to go with Acuna and Donaldson 1-2. That's kind of where I stand on it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that it's because of the gaping need in corner outfield. That is the one. So I think we're aligned on that pretty much up and down the board. One of the questions that we got, actually, we'll transition to now about the outfield specifically, came from Jerry. And he asks, are any of the free agent outfielders, aside from Bryce Harper, actually appealing to you for the Braves? Or is it actually just a trade or nothing scenario for Atlanta? So I want to name a couple of the options that are out there just so we sort of enlighten, sort of cast a light on who actually is available. AJ Pollock is the headliner that's still out there. Adam Jones, Marwin Gonzalez, and old friend Markakis are the best four options in the outfield available in terms of free agency. Everybody else is a trade candidate that we have and will discuss in the future. So if those are the best available options, anybody actually appeal to you in the spirit of the question as they're asking it?
I mean, AJ Pollock is interesting because he's a legitimately good baseball player when he's healthy, but of course, he's never healthy, right? I mean, he had that crazy, 2015, where he was one of the best players in baseball. But since then, that was his only year where he stayed healthy. He's never played more than 150 games, except for that 1 year.
More than 135 games since that year,
right.
Honestly.
I mean, it's chronic. And, it's maybe getting out of spacious Chase Field will help him. But I think to give that guy you're paying for really his one incredible season in 2015, which was obviously 3 or 4 years ago now. So I think unless Pollock is, again, we just talked about with Kimbrel, unless his ass comes way down, I don't think Pollock is really in the running. Adam Jones was talked about a little bit over the last week. He really hasn't been the Adam Jones that people think of in 2 or 3 years. I guess if the Braves are in the middle of February and they still don't have an outfielder, I mean, heck, I'd probably even prefer Nick Markakis over Adam Jones, just given a few things.
Yeah, I think that's actually one that we got. I can't remember who asked it, because my apologies, but we actually got somebody asking that exact question, like, would you rather have Jones or Markakis? I think Markakis is a lot safer.
Like, yeah.
If you want upside, it's probably Jones, him just finding something. But I think safety-wise, you know what you're going to get from Markakis. And it's not sexy at all. And he's been discussed on this podcast quite a bit. But I think if it comes down to it, and you had to sign one of these guys, you know, Pollock is easily in a different stratosphere from the other three, but his risk is sort of there. Safety wise, Markakis is the fallback, which is the reason why he's discussed. Obviously, plus the local connection. In fact, he was already here, but he's the one where you could just pencil him in, know exactly what he's going to do. Because even last year, he had the great 6 weeks, and then was just kind of the guy he always was before that. So, yeah, I mean, long story short, it's Pollock. And it's a bunch of guys who are not sexy in free agency. So yeah. Appealing is an interesting
Gonzalez.
Word. Cargo's, I mean, Denard spans 35. Like, I always liked him, but he's old now.
Yeah.
There's guys that are on that list that you would recognize. But, you know, I continue to think, honestly, that if anybody is a free agent option, it's Markakis. And I don't love saying that out loud, but I do think that's what is going to happen. If you told me that the Braves are going to sign a free agent starting outfielder, I would bet a lot of money that it's Markakis.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, if they're going to address it, it needs to be a trade. And we could probably talk for an hour about all the trade options, and it's everyone from...
There are a couple that I want to ask about, so they're coming.
Yeah,
so.
And maybe that's our segue in. I mean, there's probably a dozen outfielders who, you know, for as much activity as there's been, there really hasn't been a ton of outfield movement. Some pretty obvious guys who would appear to be on teams that are looking at a rebuild that haven't really been moved yet. So I think ultimately the Braves are going to make a move for an outfielder via trade. So I guess let's jump into that.
Yeah, one last thing. I want to say this out loud because I think I've said it, but I'm not sure I've said it recently. There is this is me talking now. People are going to be surprised by this. There is a path for me to be okay with re-signing Nick Markakis. Are you ready for this, Scott?
I never thought I would hear the day.
That path is trading for Real Muto. That's the only way that I would be like on board with Markakis, is if the Braves have that massive upgrade at catcher and they look around and say, all right, we use the capital for catcher. Let's go ahead and bring back Markakis as like the sixth best hitter in the lineup.
Yeah, 1 year, $10 million. Yeah,
we know what he's going to give you. Yeah, maybe like 1 year, 15 max, something like that. It's a short-term contract. There's no risk. He's someone that they know. Obviously, Snicker loves him. I'm okay with that because, I mean, and my beef has long been with the system, not the player. Like, Markakis has value. He always has. The problem is him hitting fourth all season long, him playing 162, all that fun stuff. If you have Real Muto and your top four is legitimately elite, it makes it a lot easier to have Markakis, A, because that way he's not hitting in a power spot in your lineup probably, and B, It's not that big of a deal because, you know, you have some weaknesses still. You know, shortstop, obviously Dansby's not great at the plate right now. But if you turn catcher into a legitimate positive, it is much, much easier to roll into a season with Swanson, Inciarte, and Markakis. Because those guys are now your worst three hitters. You know what I mean? Like, having those three be your worst three, you're okay. If those three are not your worst three hitters and you're trotting out, all respect to Flowers and McCann, you know, going from those guys to Real Muto makes it a lot more palatable to sign Markakis or Adam Jones, somebody like that. It doesn't have to be Markakis, but that's just the easy example there. That's the only way that I would be all right with that if I'm a Braves fan, is if they had that massive upgrade elsewhere. And the only place to do that really is at catcher.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's a good point. I mean, you're right. If they are able to upgrade, I mean, the obvious area there is in the outfield. If they are able to, or rather at catcher, if they're able to upgrade at catcher, then if you know, Markakis and his 95 to 100 WRC plus, as he's done the last few years, is your sixth hitter, you can do a lot worse. So at least there's options. And I know, again, we talked about earlier, it feels like the Braves haven't done much lately, and that's basically correct. But there is still two plus, almost even 2.5 months left to get something done. And it's just, you know, being patient and waiting and having it all to come together.
For sure. And that was my one way to get Real Muto into the podcast, because to keep the streak alive of like
that's right
8 weeks in a row.
But we've got to get Craig Mish on the show.
Because that rumor will never die. It's not that I think it's going to happen, but it's reasonable enough to where I am starting to think about what would happen elsewhere if the Braves did pull that off. Because I can't imagine they're going to trade. Maybe I can. I would not predict that they would trade for Real Muto and then make another big splash in the outfield. Maybe they would do that, but you know what I mean? Like, they're going to have to use
just
real capital.
Prospect capital. I get that.
So it could happen. Maybe they do that still, but I think if you get the big splash at catcher, it makes it a lot less likely that you do that in the outfield. So just wanted to at least throw that out there as an option. Okay, a couple other guys that we were asked about that we've never discussed on the podcast, I don't think. One came from Tom, and he says, I've seen chatter about Joey Galloway on my Twitter timeline.
Joey Galloway.
Joey Galloway. Sorry, Joey Gallo. I'm in football mode. Joey Gallo. And he says, I don't think it's actually a rumor or anything, but where would you guys stand on acquiring him and having him in the open corner outfield spot? So Joey Gallo is a interesting and polarizing figure. A lot of fans I've seen talking about Joey Gallo really don't like that idea. And then people, they're more in the vein of you and I, like the stat, maybe not stat obsessed, but stat focused, at least people that like the stats and use them, like him a lot more. So where do you stand on Gallo as a possibility, knowing that he's sort of an interesting player and really on his own?
Yeah, I mean, he is who he is. He's a guy who's going to hit 40 to 50 homers. He's a guy who's going to strike out 200 times a year, gets on base, draws a lot of walks. I mean, he's pretty much a modern day Adam Dunn. People remember Adam Dunn. He's either going to strike out, he's going to walk, or he's going to homer. And I think more so than ever, that's more and more prevalent in today's game. I'm a fan of Gallo. I like that he can realistically play the outfield. He can play third. He can play first. You talk about having some versatility with the roster. He's somebody who you can play all over. And he might not be a gold glove outfielder or a gold glover at third or first, but he won't embarrass you out there and gives you some flexibility.
No, that's actually a really important thing, because I think I've seen this a ton on Twitter. People think that he's a terrible defender, and he's not. He's not a bad defender. Like, his numbers are fine.
Cannon. Yeah, he has a cannon arm, too. I mean,
I think people just assume with that guy's profile in an outfield spot that he's just a bad defender, but he's actually a really good athlete, and he has a huge arm, as you mentioned. So that is not a negative for Joey Gallo. It's not a huge positive, but it's not a negative. So that's important to note in this conversation.
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows what Texas is doing? I mean, they seem like a team that would, at least if I was running the Texas Rangers, I would be selling everybody I have, because and they did trade Profar last week. If I was running the Rangers, I would trade everybody I have, because obviously you're not going to compete with the Astros the next 2 years. You're not going to compete with the A's the next 2 years. The Angels are kind of doing their thing. Who knows what the Mariners are doing? If I'm Texas's front office, I'm basically trying to trade anybody who has value. So far, they haven't done that. Again, there's two more months to do it. But if the Braves got Gallo, I'd be happy. There would be a portion of the fan base that would never be open to him, and then I guess he would hit a ball outside, hit a ball into the battery and down the right field line.
He probably would.
And people would warm up to him a bit more. So he's one of, we talked about maybe a dozen or so outfielders out there who make some sense for the Braves. He's one of that list, and somebody who has an interesting skill set. I'm sure that if the Braves, of the internal discussions the Braves have had, he's one of the many names they've discussed.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think his profile is so extreme that people just can't understand or want to understand why there's value there. But he's young. Number one, he just turned 25. He's under control until 2022. So 2023 free agency will be the first time. So that brings real value as well. The last 2 years, his WRC pluses are 121 and 110. So he's a solidly above average hitter in the aggregate. You throw in the solid defense, and that's a guy who has been worth, 2.8 wins in back-to-back years on Fangraphs and on Baseball Reference, 3.2 in 2017 and 2.1 last year in 2018. So he's been a starting caliber player the last two seasons. His OPS is high because of his slugging. He's a guy who has a career slugging of 500, and that's actually higher than that over the last 2 years. It's actually 516 since he's become like a full-timer the last 2 years. But the strikeouts are what they are, and people just can't see beyond it. But he does walk a decent amount. He has a 12% walk rate, is what I'm seeing. Yeah, 12.8 last year, 14% the year before. That's really, really good. Strikeout rate is obviously comically high, but I'm on board with Joey Gallo. Like, if you can get that guy at a reasonable price, sign me up. I think, obviously, fans will not love it. Some fans will love it. Some fans will not love it at all and, like, be out of it immediately. But he's one of the more intriguing guys for me, honestly, that are actually, like, available but wouldn't cost the farm. That combination is kind of interesting, and I think it's probably the space where the Braves are playing right now. Like, Mitch Haniger's been a popular name I know you loved. Bowman sort of shot that down and was like, doesn't really seem like it's a possibility because the Mariners don't want to trade him. That makes sense. He's pretty awesome. But a step down from that, Gallo is in that range, and given his youth and his control, he makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, and it's you just hit on Haniger and kind of took the words out of my mouth. I mean,
Oh,
other
my
than
apologies.
Haniger, no, it's other than Haniger, there is a fairly significant hole in the game of basically every player who the Braves could realistically bring in for right or left field, whatever they want to do with Acuña. I mean, you talk about Gallo and you have the strikeout concerns, and it's a different game now, but anytime you are talking about a guy who's going to strike out in 35% of his at bats, I mean, it's a legitimate concern. Let's not completely blow that away. You look at David Peralta, guy with pretty across the board, good baseball player, 2 years of control left, only 31 years old, but he has some pretty significant splits against left-handed versus right-handed pitching. He's, of course, a lefty hitter, doesn't hit lefty super well. And outside of Chase Field, he's been a pretty subpar hitter compared to hitting a Chase. Castellanos was a hot name, a player who great bat, but legitimately might be the worst defensive player in baseball. I mean, he's like worse than Matt Kemp was. So you keep going down the line with all, Jock Peterson can't hit lefties. So you keep going down the line with all these guys, and you really kind of have to pick where you want your weakness to be. If you're cool with having this guy who doesn't hit lefties, then so be it. If you're cool with having a guy who's going to strike out like Gallo and strike out 35% of the time, then that's your pick your poison, so to speak. So unless they are able to go back to Haniger, which it doesn't seem like Seattle is really looking to move him, they might be treating him more like the Braves treated Freddie Freeman during their rebuild. Then you have to pick and choose. You have to pick your battle and say, okay, this is what we want. We're going to live with X, but we're going to reap the benefits of Y and Z. So it'll be fun to see who they eventually circle back to.
Yep, there's a lot of names, and I think we'll leave it there in terms of guys who are available. We can speculate on guys, but we're all just guessing. And I think Gallo is an interesting name. Just keep in mind.
Okay.
One sort of left turn comes from at @ctrim49, and he asks, at what point should Ozzie Albies consider putting a stop to switch hitting and just bat right-handed? This is pretty extreme. And when I read it, I was like, oh, okay, it seems kind of extreme. But here are the numbers. Just set the scene a little bit. In 256 plate appearances, 256 plate appearances as a right-handed batter, he has a 141 WRC plus. He's been absolutely awesome. 333, 369, 542 slash line. That's awesome. As a lefty, in 670 plate appearances, so a lot more because obviously there are more right-handed pitchers than left-handed pitchers. He has an 89 WRC plus, which is bad. 242, 297, 420 slash line. Big caveat here is that this is also a small sample. Even 670 plate appearances is basically just one season. That's not enough for me to get worried about Ozzie necessarily. But just setting the scene, what was your first reaction to this? How crazy is it? And given his age, I think it doesn't seem like it's happening gonna happen anytime soon, but what do you make of this?
I think they'll give him at least another year to try to figure out right-handed pitching, or rather left-handed pitching. No, right-handed pitching is a left-handed batter in the
Yes, there you
majors.
go.
There you go. It's easy to say when we aren't the ones standing in, but Mark Bowman talked about this on his podcast about a week ago, and you have to realize that when Ozzie's been switch hitting for as long as he has, he, as good as he's been as a right-handed batter, he's only seen left-handed pitchers from when
for
he's batting
years.
from the right side. I mean, it's hard enough to hit a baseball, let alone when you go from only seeing one thing when you're at the plate to another. And an 89 WRC plus as a lefty isn't great, but if you can balance that out with if you figure 20% of your at bats are going to come against lefties, then it helps balance out, obviously, a little bit more. Ultimately, I know there was some talk that the Braves had maybe internally discussed it at the second half of last year, though that's been squashed at least by the front office publicly. Who knows what exactly went on? ultimately, I think they let Ozzie keep doing his switch hitting thing, at least for 2019. If we're having this discussion again in a year, maybe they do at least try in maybe spring training and see what he can do as a righty only. What do you think about it?
I don't think he's been bad enough for them to do that anytime soon. Like, he'll be 22 in January. That's extremely young.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I know it's bad. Like, 89 WRC plus is not good. But that's not, like, I think it'd have to be really, 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 really bad for them to do this. That's just my opinion. I might be wrong about that. That's me on the outside taking a guess. But I think you'd have to get either a much bigger sample or he'd have to be just terrible this season as a left-handed batter, which might happen. I doubt it, but it might happen. But 89 WRC plus is not good. But, you know, with his defense, if you just took that, he's still a starter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, last year, Ozzie was a full-time player and was worth almost 4 wins on Fangraphs doing what he's doing now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't imagine them actually tinkering with it unless it just he just fell off the table completely from that side of the plate. But
yeah.
You don't see guys just stop switch hitting that have been doing it as long as they have with some success. It just doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, and that's tough to do just in the middle of a season when you're in the grind of, you know, 162 games and 185 days or whatever it is. That's tough just to flip on. And it's easy for us to say, oh, yeah, you just bat from the right side instead.
And it wouldn't happen in the middle of the season. It would have to be a full winter thing.
Yeah.
There's just no way he'd ever stop in the middle of the season. Like, because of what you said, when's the last time he faced a left-handed pitcher as a left-handed hitter? Like, it just doesn't happen. Sorry, the other way around. Right-handed pitcher, right-handed hitter. But you know what I mean. It doesn't matter. You get the gist. When's the last time he did that? I don't even know. I'm sure it was a long, long time ago. And it's not a minor thing to tweak in the major leagues against major league pitching when you've already been like an all-star caliber player for a year. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like this is Dansby when he just has never hit. Ozzie, you know, it wasn't all offense driven. Obviously, he was great on defense last year, but the guy was worth almost 4 wins in the big leagues over a full season in his first full season. Like, that guy, you don't really mess with that guy unless he just falls off the table. So I wouldn't hold your breath. I get the idea, though, to be sure, because when the splits are that big, it's going to be a discussion point. But a lot of guys who switch it their whole career have a strong side and a weak side. He might just be one of those guys.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's worth trying out again and seeing and evaluating, and maybe that Seitzer is able to get with Ozzie. And it seems like, at least publicly, what's been written about him is about Ozzie is the leg kick from the right side is, or from the left side rather, is a little funky. Maybe they can get the timing down on that a little bit. Maybe have Chipper Jones come to camp, who so notoriously had the not an extreme, but you know, had the toe tap. Maybe Ozzie works a little something like that into his game. But as you said, you're talking about a kid who's 21, 22 years old, coming off a 4-win season as basically a rookie. He's going to figure it out. He's a talented guy. Even if he is far better on the right side than the left side, over the course of a year, you're going to get more than enough production out of him, especially at a position like second base.
Yep, that's probably a good place to leave that. Two more things. One real quickly. Andrew Jones has gotten some Hall of Fame discussion. He's probably going to fall off the ballot based on some of the ballot tracking stuff. I'm not a huge Hall of Fame guy. We don't do a ton of that on this podcast for that reason. But it's a talking point because he's probably going to fall off. I will say there's some reasons for that, but what do you think, what'd you make of this? I'm not surprised. Like, he didn't get a lot of attention last year in terms of just votes, pure voting. I think there are reasons for that, which I will share in a moment, but, any surprise, anything that's worth discussing on your end when it comes to Andrew in the Hall of Fame?
I don't know if it's necessarily a surprise. As you said, there were some signs that he just wasn't a guy who seemed likely to really gain a bunch of votes just based on how voters have voted the last couple of years. But it is a real shame. I mean, it's easy to forget for a decade. I mean, he was, for my money, one of the 5 best outfielders in baseball from 97 to 07 with the Braves in his prime. I mean, you look at him, he averaged about 5.5 WAR per season. I mean, all the Gold Gloves, the power. I think maybe a little bit of it is how not good he was towards the back end of his career. He fell off a bit towards the end before retiring. But again, I mean, I think to be a Hall of Famer, you need to be great for a decade, and he certainly was one of the best outfielders ever, defensively, offensively, you name it. So it really is a shame to see Andrew more than likely fall off. I guess about 40% of the votes or so have been counted from last I saw, which is a bummer, but I guess it's not a huge surprise, at least to me, I guess.
No, it's not. And there are three reasons, I think. And the first two are bigger actual reasons for the voting, in my opinion. But there are three reasons why you wouldn't put Andrew on, in my opinion. At least the people that have voted have said this. I think, first of all, guys with a defense first profile often get picked on. Andrew's defense, everyone agrees, was absolutely incredible for that decade you're talking about. But aside from Ozzie Smith, you don't really hear a lot of guys who are just pure defensive guys in the Hall of Fame. Generally, it's all about counting numbers, etc. I think Andrew is one of the best 10 defenders of all time, regardless of position. He's that good. But I think voters, as a general rule, favor offense, which hurts him. Number two is something you mentioned as well, him falling off in a hurry. His last 5 seasons in the league, he was a part-time-ish player and was not good. And just when guys fall off like that, they normally get punished. Like he did have a legitimate like decade peak, which is a little bit longer than some guys that you hear about with some longevity concerns. But the way that he ended, I'm sure, did not go well. And it's worth pointing out, and I've pointed this out before, but he got arrested for domestic violence in 2012. That was not a good situation. He should be dinged for that, in a lot of ways. Police report was not good for everybody that's seen that. It was not a good situation for Andrew. That's something that has to be said every time you talk about Andrew Jones from now on. In fact, I wish I had done more of that. I kind of famously was on the Andrew Jones Driven. It's like my one TV appearance I've ever done, and I probably should have not done that, in my opinion. Now, I think I am someone who treats it, the Hall of Fame, as a, especially Baseball Hall of Fame, because of how many bad people are in the Baseball Hall of Fame already. I kind of just make it a numbers thing and a performance thing, but if you care about the character stuff, it's definitely a black mark and it should be out there alongside Bobby Cox and others. Like, there are people in the Braves organization that should be dinged considerably for that off-field stuff. And that is a big, big thing. Well, because domestic violence is nothing you want to fool around with. So, I almost said the word sadly. It's probably not the word I would use. I think, unfortunately, that is not the reason why he's not going to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think that most people are voting on him or not voting on him because of that. I think this is, unlike steroid guys, I think Andrew's just being left off for baseball reasons. I think maybe you find a voter or two or five or ten that don't want to put him on because of the violence arrest. But I think it's mostly performance, and that's why he's being left off. And performance-wise, he should be in the Hall of Fame. I think that's pretty clear, and I argued that, which is why I was on the Andrew Jones thing, I'm pretty sure. But I think performance-wise, he should be in. If you want to leave him off because of the arrest and the domestic violence, I'm okay with that too, because it's pretty awful stuff if you read the police report. But that's sort of the big picture there. I don't want to do too much on that, but anything else you want to hit before we move on?
No, it's a bummer. I mean, those are the guys you grew up watching, right? So it's a bummer to see him not in. But again, barring a last minute rally, it looks like he's going to fall off, which is too bad. But
Oh, and also Fred McGriff is probably not going to get in either, it seems. It might be close. Fred McGriff, another former Brave, obviously wasn't quite as associated with the Braves as Andrew, but McGriff was a big time Brave, so he'll be something to worth tracking. He's actually he's a lot closer than Andrew is in terms of the voting and stuff like that. And McGriff has the counting number, like the big counting number that everybody looks at is the home runs. McGriff has 493, and I'm pretty sure if he had seven more home runs, he'd be in the Hall of Fame, which is always funny
Yeah.
to me. Like, seven home
Yeah.
runs should not keep you out of the Hall of Fame, but apparently
No.
that might happen with Fred McGriff.
No.
Okay, last thing here, and this came from Lawrence Pemberton, the one that I actually grabbed. A lot of people ask this question: which team, Scott, here in the at the end of December, is the biggest threat to the Braves repeating as NL East champions? Is it the Mets, the Phillies, or the Nats? And obviously, it's too early for this. The Braves have a lot more stuff to do, and the other three teams might do some more stuff as well. But all three have been active in different ways. So, who's your biggest threat? And I guess I'm going to put you to the fire and ask you for a standings prediction here
Oh,
in December,
geez.
which is absolutely insane. But I'm making you do it anyway.
biggest threat, right? I mean, to cop out and use the numbers, I mean, the computers like the Nationals the most right now. And but then again, I mean, the Nationals have been the on paper division champions for the last like 7 years, and they've only been the division champs 4 times in that stretch. So, I would guess the Nationals are the biggest threat,
I mean,
adding
their
Corbin.
rotation, by the way, just so we lay it out here, Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin is pretty preposterous, to be honest with you.
And
So, I mean,
Anibal, old friend
they probably
Anibal.
lose Harper. I mean, Harper's probably gone, but they replace him with Victor Robles, who's a big time prospect. They have Juan Soto, who's awesome. Trey Turner, they still have Anthony Rendon. Like, they're gonna be really good again.
Yeah, added Yan Gomes. I mean, so I think the Nats last year were 82-80. I think the biggest threat to the Nationals or to the Braves would be the Nats. I think the Mets, I mean, I kind of got roasted last year because my bold preseason prediction was the Mets were going to overtake the Nationals.
Oh, I remember
at
that.
The East.
I forgot that until right now.
Though in my defense, I would argue that when like literally half of their opening day roster hit the DL in the first 3 months, you know, injuries and whatnot are hard to predict. With the Mets, it's always going to come down to if their four starters stay healthy. I mean, if DeGrom, yep. Syndergaard, Mats, and Wheeler give them 700 innings next year, I think they're going to have as good a chance as anyone. But that's obviously a lot easier said than done, and they're just a team that has not been healthy over the last few years. The Phillies, we'll see. I mean, they went into the offseason with all the hype and that they were going to spend was it stupidly was the quote from the ownership.
That was it, yep.
You know, who knows?
They did. Andrew McCutchen for huge money is probably a good example of that.
Yeah, I mean, for a team that was supposedly going to win the offseason, all they've really done so far is trade for Gene Segura and sign McCutchen.
I'm looking at their roster. They don't scare me. They really don't. Their defense is going to be so bad again. I mean, if they got Harper, that's something different. And they've been linked to Harper at various times. But aside from that, their pitching doesn't scare me. I mean, Aaron Nola is good, obviously. But, you know, Jake Arrieta is number two. Nick Pivetta is fine. Vince Velasquez is fine. They don't have anybody. Their bullpen is kind of a weird.
Yeah. And if Nola regresses even a little bit, they're in trouble. I mean,
I think for me, I mean, I'm stepping on you a little bit, but I think I'd have them fourth, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I would easily. I think it's pretty easy at this point. I think they'd be fourth for me.
There's a long way to go, which is what we should couch everything we're talking about with here, because it's December 27th. But yeah, I think I'd have Philly fourth. Would I pick the Braves? I'm not sure I would. I think I would pick the Nationals because we're talking about the Braves with Adam Duvall as the core outfielder.
Right.
You know what I mean? Totally. As currently constructed, the Nats are the best team, I think. I think, honestly, I think I'd go Nats. I think I'd go Nats, Mets, Braves if we're assuming the Braves are the current roster, which is not going to happen
roster,
again.
Yeah, current roster,
current
sure.
roster, Braves third, I think. But if we assume, and I think we have to assume they do something in the outfield, and for me, I'm assuming they do something on the pitching staff somewhere, whether it be bullpen or starter. They're going to do something else, in my opinion. That's not as much of a given as the outfield is, but they are not going into the season with Adam Duvall as an everyday starter in the outfield. That's not going to happen.
No.
So, so that's what I'll say. I will go Nats, Mets, Braves at this moment, but I'm definitely prepared. Like, even if you gave me Markakis as the Braves starting right fielder, they go up to second, I think, behind the Nats. Maybe even first. Like it gets closer. That's sort of a big jump. It's probably a two-three win jump.
Sure. Of course. I mean, if the Braves over the next 2 months, you know, so far the Nationals, they might have a minor move left in them, but they seem like they're fairly close
they're
to being done.
Yeah.
The Mets seem fairly close to being done, and we'll see. Joel Sherman of the New York Post actually reported, I think tonight, that the word on the street, if you will, is that neither Harper nor Machado really loved the idea of playing in Philadelphia. I mean, ultimately,
I'm not surprised by that, to be honest with you.
And I think, you know, there's some obvious factors there. I think Machado is going to go to New York, and I think Harper's going to go to the Dodgers, especially after they cleared money. I think he wants to be out west. He's from Vegas. Going back to the question, I mean, rosters today, I would probably say Nationals, Mets, Braves, Phillies, but that's today. If the Braves over the next 2 months trade for Real Muto, trade for, I don't know, Sonny Gray and sign Markakis to a one-year deal, then I would probably put the Braves
first,
right there with the Nationals. Yeah, I mean, it would be close. I imagine the computers would too.
It would be close. And I think it's important to note, like the Nats rotation is better than anything that anybody else has in the division. Like, the Nats rotation is the best unit, I think. That's just me talking. But when you have those three guys.
Most dominant compared to the other four, or the other
three,
rather.
I guess if you assume Anibal Sanchez just falls off the map, maybe not. But if he's okay, then those top three guys are pretty scary. And their lineup is still good. I mean, it's not as good as it would be with Bryce Harper in the middle of it, but it's still pretty good. And by the way, the Mets, I'm the biggest, you know, laugh at the Mets guy in the world. The Mets have a pretty impressive on paper roster at this
point.
They've
had a great offseason. I mean, I know, again, like you said, people make fun of the Mets. They have had as good of an offseason as they realistically could have. I mean, they
kept Familia and they have Edwin Diaz. That's a pretty slam the door 8-9 inning combo. They get Wilson Ramos, who is not incredible, but is a solid starting catcher. Cano is still very good. He's overpaid, but he's still very good. Their outfield is pretty interesting. Brandon Nimmo is really good. It's about the pitching. If you believe
Conforto,
in the pitching,
yeah,
if you believe in the pitching, then you're going to believe in the Mets. If you don't, then you don't, which I totally get it. And they're the most volatile. I think if the Mets won 100 games, I wouldn't be stunned. If they won 74 games, I wouldn't be stunned. Like that's the craziest part about the Mets is if they just fall apart in the rotation, they could be just actively bad. But if it's DeGrom, Syndergaard in all capital letters all season long, those guys are awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is. And you talk about the Nationals having the clear advantage with the rotation, and that's certainly true. But as we said, if the Mets get 600 or 700 innings out of their big four, that's a scary team. I mean, that you're getting real, especially from Wheeler. If Wheeler shows the second half of last year, I mean, Wheeler was as good as really any pitcher in the National League in the second half of last season. We all know what DeGrom, Cy Young winner, can do. Syndergaard, if he's healthy. But there's a reason we keep saying if healthy after all these. If all these guys were locked for 180 innings, we probably wouldn't even be having the discussion. So it'll be fun. It's going to be a tough division for sure.
I will say this. There is a chance. This is the last thing I'm going to say, and I'll leave it to you for the last word. There is a chance that the Braves have the two best position players in the National League East. Just saying.
Freddie and Ronald. Yeah.
Freddie and Ronald.
I mean, if Donaldson.
Oh, yeah. If Donaldson goes great. I mean, I think there's obviously some good players. Obviously, Juan Soto's really good. Anthony Rendon's really good. But the Mets don't really have that number one bat right now. Like, they have, you know, Cano's really good, but he's not that guy anymore.
No, Phillies, Conforto's good, but not elite.
Same thing. And Phillies don't have that guy either at the moment. So, I mean, pitching-wise, the Braves are definitely not ahead of either the Mets or the Nationals, pitching-wise. But, you know, in terms of the lineup, it really helps to have two legitimately, you know, Acuña's not a lock to be legit, to be elite until he does it 2 years in a row. But Freddie is an elite player. I think Acuña's going to be an elite player. I think we're all pretty confident in that. And having those two guys in the same lineup, plus a recent MVP in Donaldson, the Braves, there is a chance, as you sort of allude to, there's a chance the Braves have the three best position players in the National League East. I would not predict that, but that is actually in play, like, possible.
No, those three, maybe Anthony Rendon, and then...
Yeah, Rendon is the reason why I'm not just... Rendon and Soto are the reasons I'm not just saying that out loud as, like, a prediction. Rendon, I think if you just say who's better in 2019, Rendon or Donaldson, I'm going to say Rendon. But... Donaldson could be better than Rendon. Yeah. Like that's in play. I think without question, the Braves have two of the best three position players in the National League East with Ronnie, Freddie, and Rendon. Those are the three guys for me. So, just something to point out. Depth matters and everything matters. Bullpens and starting pitching, all that fun stuff. But it helps to have some elite talent. The Braves haven't really had. I mean, Freddie's been awesome for a long time, but having two of those guys is helpful.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you talk about getting a full year of Acuña if he's even close to what he was in the second half of last year. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right, we've done 52 minutes. It's just hilarious on a podcast. We have nothing to discuss. But hopefully that will give people some traveling podcast audio for their holiday, you know, transgressions, all that fun stuff. Everybody's flying around, driving around, doing family stuff. Hopefully this will satisfy some of your Braves craving. I apologize that there isn't actually more news to talk about, but hopefully that will sort of whet your palate. Scott, please plug yourself. Plug anything you got going on. I know there's nothing going on in terms of the Braves, but if you have any ideas, please share them and please tell people where they can find your work in general and on your Twitter account, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, as always, check the blog. I mean, it's our Slack room has been pretty sad the last 2 or 3 weeks.
There's just nothing to do. I feel so bad. Again, I feel so bad for Chris Willis, who's like trying his best. Chris is great. He's one of the best, like, managers of people that I've ever worked with in this industry. But when there's no content, there's no content, and there's just nothing going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, nothing. I mean, literally nothing. I mean, even we talk about the lack of moves. I mean, it's not like the Braves have, you know, they did the Donaldson McCann stuff, and then they signed a left-handed bench bat, you know, a Matt Adams or a seventh-inning special, you know, a Peter Moylan from 5 years ago where he was a really good righty out of the bullpen. I mean, even, like, minor league stuff they haven't done. Which is just kind of bizarre. I don't know. It's hard to fathom. But anyway, But no, as always, check the site and Twitter, ScottColeman55. We always do a lot of fun stuff over there, so check it out.
And for all your Sacramento Kings talk, please follow Scott on the Twitter machine.
Kings, they're good this year.
Everybody, we're in that time of the season when everyone gets mad at me. At the time of the year when everybody gets mad at me that doesn't care about basketball. I get at least two or three tweets about why are you tweeting about the NBA every week. My response is always, and they're always from Braves fans, by the way. It's always Braves fans that do this. Which, you know, shouts to you guys. I know you're diehards and you probably don't care about the Hawks. All I will say is my number one sports gig is covering the Hawks, so my apologies, but that's my number one thing. It's not going to be going away. And also, what I would say is nothing's happening with the Braves. What do you want me to talk about? Just disappear on Twitter? I'm sorry. No. But it's going to come, I promise. And Scott and I will always talk about Arizona and Michigan and the Kings and the whatever, the Blues, the Colts, Falcons, whatever else.
Colts, there we go. Colts this weekend.
Big game for the Colts on Sunday. Go Colts.
Sorry to the Titans fans, but
Titans fans. I know there are some of you that listen to the pod, but
there's a lot of, I think of, other than Falcons, of people who like interact with frequently on Twitter, I think it's for sure Falcons one, obviously.
I think it's Panthers
too. It's Panthers. Yeah, there's a lot of Panthers fans. Panthers fans, Titans.
For whatever reason, there isn't a huge Braves Saints crossover, which actually surprises me. I wonder if they just don't like baseball or they are like Cardinals fans, maybe. But like, there isn't usually a Braves Saints crossover. There's a couple people that I'm thinking of right now that do that, but there really is kind of a small window. Yeah. It's mostly Panthers, Titans, Falcons, and that's kind of it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, you're right. There's a few that I can think of, but no, you're right. It's for sure those three. But regionally, I mean, I'm sure that region is pretty heavy.
Oh yeah, you know, it's a football region, and honestly, Scott, I'm sure you get it because you follow a lot of us on Twitter, but I grew up in SEC country as someone who roots for a Big Ten school, so I was the shut-in, and people didn't like me very much growing up, but it's definitely a college football area. Number one, number two, and number three college football in this particular state where I live, so anyway.
That's right. Who's Michigan got in the bowl game?
Florida. I will be there on Saturday in the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. The first time in my lifetime that Michigan has played in Atlanta, and it's a game that I don't have any interest in at all because Florida-Michigan is a terrible matchup.
I was going to say, first to 10, right?
It's going to be awful. They played three times in the last, 5 years already. It's awful. But I have to go because Michigan's never played in Atlanta in my lifetime, and here they are. So I just have no choice. Yep. I will be there, and we will see what happens. But
there you go.
All right. We've rambled on too long. Scott, thank you, as always. As for everybody else, we'll see you guys in 2019 unless something crazy happens, which I do not anticipate over the next few days. Regardless, I'll have a pod. I'm planning to have a podcast that first week of January sometime. I'm not really sure when. Maybe the Sunday. We'll see how things go. And if nothing else, we will see you guys then. Please enjoy your new year. Thank you again for listening to the podcast. Thank you again for subscribing, for telling your friends, for checking out TalkingTalk.com. It's been huge. We have really enjoyed this year. I'll speak for myself and that one. I'm sure Scott agrees. The 2018 has been fun for the Braves, and hopefully 2019 is just as fun. So stay tuned. Lock it in with us. We'll see you guys next week.